You're watching Let the Quran Speak. It seems that people are still plotting to blow up airlines, in this case, Al-Qaeda operatives who act in the name of Islam. The latest is an underwear bomb that evades detection by security. Luckily, the CIA managed to foil the bomb plot. So the question, Brother Shabir, is what motivation does Al-Qaeda have for these sorts of actions that it takes?
Well, whatever their motivations, I have to start by saying that they're working based on misunderstandings and negative motivations, though they must see it as somehow positive. I mean, we 10 years later, we can still be shocked by the images of the 9/11 bombings and other bombings in other parts of the world. In London, there was the 7/7. There were bombings in Riyadh, in Bali, in several parts of the world.
It's Madrid. Gotten a bit old, you could say.
Yes, but if we see the images again, they still shock us. Mm-hmm. And it is, in that sense, quite disturbing to know that there are some people in the world still plotting, for whatever reasons, to blow up airlines or in whatever way to kill civilians. Mm-hmm. This is quite troubling. So what might be their motivations? We should only discuss this from the point of view of trying to understand the problem so as to root it out, mm-hmm. Never to offer any kind of justification for their acts. In fact, if one were to look carefully, one would see that these individuals have to be somehow slightly deranged, because if one were to look at both the practical outcome and the moral principles behind this, one would see that their actions are quite flawed.
Mm-hmm. Or their motivations. So what's their grand plan then? What do you think is their grand plan?
Well, they are probably hoping that by showing a force of power, they can stand up to the great powers, if not by conventional battle, because they do not have that the infrastructure and the conventional weaponry and armies and so on to stand up in a confrontation according to the rules of modern warfare, then they can use guerrilla tactics. They can fight from the shadows. And of course, the shadows are becoming smaller and smaller, parts of the world where such individuals will be welcome and where they can successfully set up their operations are becoming smaller and smaller. And we're seeing that even in the parts of the world where they are, they might be taken out by missiles, mm-hmm. Even from a distance. And that, too, is a troubling aspect of the whole problem, because there's power against power. Mm-hmm. If we do not sit at the negotiation table and try to work out our differences, then it's a matter of who has the greater power and who can use power to their advantage, even fighting from the shadows using guerrilla warfare or whatever other means of stealth, mm-hmm. they can muster. So their motivations, I believe, are quite flawed. And I started to say that this can be seen from both the practical and the moral directions. Even if we discount the moral, because let's say they're subscribing to a very different idea of morality here, and they don't see that it is wrong to kill civilians, then let's look at the practical outcome of this. Many scholars who did not see the moral problem nevertheless describe some of the practical problems. And we can see, everyone can see what are the practical problems. For example, if you design these underwear bombs, then what happens? Then security becomes tightened everywhere. The devices to detect such bombs become more and more personally intrusive. Mm-hmm. And Muslims are the people who are more likely to be more severely affected by these intrusive scanning devices, because Muslims generally are known for modest clothing. And Muslims are quite
visible. It's obvious. You can see someone who's, you can tell that someone is a Muslim.
Yes, and just passing through one of these scanning devices and getting one's entire body appearing on a screen, to many Muslims, this is quite disturbing.
It's offensive, yeah.
Quite offensive, humiliating, and not only for Muslims, but for non-Muslims as well. But at least these people who are speaking in the name of Islam and trying to fight for Muslims should recognize that their actions are leading to much harm to Muslims in general. So that's at the practical level. And I've already described one of the problems. We can go on and list umpteen problems, mm-hmm. that result from
many Muslims being killed in different parts of the world as a result of their actions.
True, True, and sometimes their actions themselves, if they bomb a plane, many Muslims will die in the same plane because our world is integrated, people are flying together, there's no separation between Muslims and non-Muslims as it might have been in some parts of the world at one time in our history. So that's the practical problem. And then the moral problem, if you look at the Quran, there is no justification in the Quran for killing civilians. If we don't have the means to fight in a reasonable battle, in a proper confrontation, then the Quran prescribes patience and prayer. And if people are taking the law into their own hands and going to fight without the army, without the proper weaponry, and without the proper negotiations that should forestall war before war is used as a last resort, then they're actually going against the teachings of the Quran itself while they're pretending to speak in the name of Islam. So they're quite misguided.
So do you think we've won the intellectual battle against Al-Qaeda and the ideology around it?
No, we have not quite.
What you've described, it seems like what Al-Qaeda is doing is pretty, you know, silly and stupid, and we can go on and on, right? But it seems like they're still operating. So what's going on there?
Of course, many Muslims are convinced that they are wrong, but they are still convinced that they are right. Otherwise, why would they continue? Many of them are sacrificing their lives in what they think to be a just cause. So the answer is that no, we have not won the ideological battle, but the battle continues, and we have to continue this battle and increase our efforts in this battle. Those who understand what Islam truly is, they understand the teachings of the Quran, have to fund more programs like our own, and they have to continue to publish these ideas. We need to continue to engage with the very texts that these people are using to justify their actions. They're pulling verses out of the Quran and say, look, the Quran says kill them. And we have to now explain this, expound it properly using all of the sciences that were known to our classical scholars and show that they have no footing, even from the point of view of the classical interpretation of Islam.
Very quickly, when is jihad as a sort of, what does jihad mean, first of all, and when is it allowed or permitted?
The word jihad itself means struggle, and it can refer to struggles in many different ways. It could include a military struggle if and when that becomes necessary, but it has certain rules. A military struggle has certain preconditions to begin with. Mm-hmm. To begin with, it has to be a last resort. Efforts at peace have to completely fail. And then, as we can see from the Prophet's example himself, he commanded and instructed that people should not be killed if they're not in combat. On one occasion, it is noted that at the end of a battle, a woman was found dead, and the Prophet, peace be upon him, was quite disturbed. It is recorded in Sahih Muslim, and he kept asking about this, and everyone felt sorry on that occasion that this had occurred. He made the point, a non-combatant is not to be killed. The Quran itself makes this very clear. In Surah 2, verse 190, you are to fight against those who are attacking you, but do not transgress the limit, because God does not like those who transgress limits.
All right, thank you for that, Brother Shabir.
You're welcome.
We'll take a break. When we return, we answer questions we've received from you, our viewers.